coming up in just over a week, and that's Easter. Sometimes when we express our desire not to observe Easter, we're often accused of being just plain stubborn. You won't change on that, you're just plain stubborn. They may even ask, and I've been asked, are you a Christian? You know, are you a Christian? You're not observing this day that they feel honors Christ. The same often applies, of course, to Christmas, Valentine's Day, certain foods we don't eat that people feel it's all right to eat. I don't know why people feel it's all right to eat a pig, but wouldn't eat their dog. But anyway, that's a different issue than I want to discuss today. But I want to start by turning to a scripture that contains two S words that I want to discuss today. That's Psalm 78. Psalm 78 and verse 8. Psalm 78, 8. It says, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation. Now, the ancient Israel was stubborn. It's one of the yes words. A generation that set not their hearts aright, whose spirit was not steadfast in the Lord. So we have two S words there, stubborn and steadfast. And today I'd like to talk about those two things and how they affect our lives, or what's our attitude. Are we stubborn? Are we steadfast? Both suggest firmness. Both suggest firmness. An unwillingness to change. If you're stubborn, you're unwilling to change usually. You're going to stay the way you are. We'll get into that in a little more detail. And of course, if you're steadfast, you're also going to stay where you are. So today I'd like to look at stubbornness versus steadfastness. Stubbornness. We're stubborn in several ways. We're stubborn when it comes to the old man. As it's described, or we could say old woman, but the old man in Colossians 3 and verse 5, Colossians 3, 5, says, mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, that means lust really, covetousness and idolatry. These are things that are a part of our nature. A part of our human nature. You know, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, loving things that are not right, evil concupiscence, and covetousness is a big one in our society today. All those things we want and can't or shouldn't have. And covetousness is a form of idolatry. That's when we put things between us and God, and they become our idols, whether it's the car we think we deserve, or maybe the home we want to live in, or, well, go get to all manner of things, for which things' sake the wrath of God comes upon the children of disobedience, in which you also walked some time when you lived in them. But now you put off all these things, all these anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communications out of your mouth. We need to put these things away and lie not to one another. Do you lie? I know apparently if we were to look at all the vices and all the sins that people commit, the most common one is lying. And our vocabulary is just full of little excuses we use. Of course, we have little white lies. You know, the answer I would give my wife if she said, does this dress make me look fat? Well, usually in her case it doesn't. And I mean that from my heart. But sometimes I'm accused of being lying about it, because some guys, sometimes there are things that they just don't have a right answer, so you lie. Little white lies. I'm not excusing it. I'm saying that's part of our society, when there is no right answer. I find it better to say I have no comment, which is true. I don't want to say anything. So anyway... Lying is very, very common, but lie not to one another. that ye put off the old man and his deeds. And again, I can say the old woman and her deeds. You know, we have those things that we've done for years and years and years, and we kind of take them for granted, and we say, well, we're not that bad. You know, we were at lunch. I don't know why we're doing that at a potluck, talking about some of the sexual vices that we see around us. And I, as a, you know, I mean, we're talking about some really bad things, and I said, at least I can say, boy, I'm not like that. But we have our own little vices, don't we, and our own little sins, and lying and things like that. So we should have put off the old man and put on the new man, which is renewed of knowledge after the image of him that created him, the image of Jesus Christ. So that old man, though, he's stubborn. And that old woman, they're stubborn. They're in there, they're wanting to tell you, boy, this is the way to, you're missing out on a lot of fun. You know, this, wouldn't it be great to try this or try that? And we see that, you know, all around us. I heard it was actually a joke, I think, on one of the all-night shows or late-night TV shows where they mentioned that Bernie Sanders, who had said, well, yeah, I used marijuana, but it was only twice. And most of his followers are young enough that they probably are saying, big deal, only twice? Because most of them are regular marijuana users. I'm not typing them, but, you know, when you look at younger people, the people that generally are, that's funny, a guy that's my age and he's got a tremendous young following. But anyway, that old man, you know, the things that we might want to try. I remember when I was living in Philadelphia, all the young guys, I think they're in their 60s now, but the guys I worked with had all tried marijuana. And one of them, he later told me he was dead wrong when he said this. He said, you know, you don't want to get behind the wheel of a car when you're drunk. But he says, if I'm smoking a marijuana cigarette and driving down the expressway, I'm fully in command of what I'm doing. You know, and I find that hard to believe. I don't think those are the words I use. But anyway, he later, some years later, we got together and he admitted that that was a wrong observation. But they were always saying, you can't condemn marijuana use because you've never used it, as I never had. And my first experience with marijuana was in a police lab, and they had a smoking machine that blew smoke from various substances into the air. They said, you never smelled marijuana before? I said, I don't think so. So they put this marijuana cigarette in there and lit it up, and the smoke came into the room, and I said, I don't. Reminds me of a Willie Nelson concert I went to one time. But we're, you know, the old man is in there saying, you need to try this, whatever it is. You know, things that we don't not, but that old man is in there. We're stubborn. We're stubborn to the core, and the thing is we have to overcome that stubbornness. Another thing we're stubborn sometimes is that feeds on stubbornness is who we listen to. Who do we listen to? Isaiah 30 and verse 1. Isaiah 30 and verse 1. Woe to the rebellious children, saith the Lord, that take counsel, not of me, but and that cover the cover with covering, but not with my spirit, that they may add sin to sin. Who are we getting our advice from? Where are we getting our ideas from? You know, where are we getting them from? God? Are we basing what we believe? Are we filling our minds with God's word, or are we filling our minds with other things? If you go to the supermarket checkout line, you can see the tabloids. You can read the headlines, and sometimes you might buy one because inquiring minds want to know. So we can feed that to our mind. I remember seeing one headline that was talking about a man who I met who is one of America's great heroes, and I considered him a great hero, not only, not so much for what he did, but for what he stood for. And it was talking about all the porn stars and movie stars that he'd had sex with. Well, the man's dead. He was dead when this came out, so there's not much. And by the way, don't worry about Hillary Clinton becoming president. She's not going to live that long, according to the tabloids, according to those things which, and people will tell you, well, they're covering this up. Every once in a while it turns out some of this stuff turns out to be true. But if Hillary Clinton's, whether she's president or not, if she's alive next January, I can say firmly that that's not the case. That she's not going to die. She, according to this, has brain cancer or something. Another one that I heard from a lady who listens to a lot of all-night talk shows, I think. I don't know where she got this from. She said, well, a year from now, she didn't say it to me. She said it to one of our talk show hosts where I work. Barack Obama is going to be president. So wait a minute, his term is up. He's going to create a crisis, declare martial law, and stay in office. And if I had taken the call, I don't think I'd be risking much, but I'd say, hey, I've got a $100 bill here. I'm going to give it to so-and-so. You give so-and-so a $100 bill, and if Barack Obama is president a year from now, you can take them both. If not, I'll take them. Because I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. But some people are convinced it is. There are people convinced of all kinds of things. Who do we listen to? 2 Timothy 4 and verse 3. 2 Timothy, you know, that kind of feeds our stubbornness sometime. You just don't want to believe or disbelieve what you read in the tabloids. I remember some of you are too young to remember, although they're still around, CB Radio. How many of you remember CB Radio? Oh, okay, there's some old people. Well, okay, your grandparents probably told you about that. You have a CB in your car. I don't know, but anyway, I considered a deep well of misinformation, because people would talk about things on CB Radio, and, you know, if you listen to that, you would be subject to all kinds of weird stuff. I think it was Channel 9 that was the one that was cool to connect with. I had a company car that I drive once in a while that had a CB radio in it, and I just couldn't keep up with it. But today you have talk radio. And I know I used to do a talk radio show. One guy called up and says, wait a minute, some bizarre thing. And I said, that can't be true. And he said, oh, yes, it is. It was on talk radio. They wouldn't allow it on talk radio if it wasn't true. Oh, yes, they would. That's what a lot of these talk shows thrive on. Anyway, what are we listening to? Those are some sources, deep wells of misinformation. The Internet, another deep well of misinformation. You got to be careful of what you read and what you believe on the Internet. 2 Timothy 4, verse 3, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. You believe that? But will after their own lusts heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. You want teachers to tell you weird things? They're out there. Again, you can look at the tabloids. You can listen to talk radio. You can go on the Internet and find out all kinds of things. Having itching ears just can't get enough. You know, and again, he wasn't here when I said this last, but I did mention Warren Ott, I think a week ago. Maybe 2 weeks ago. I forgot how long he's been gone. And some of you reacted when I said, I know something about Warren Ott. And boy, you need to hear this. I noticed everybody's ears perked up. Well, I don't. I don't know anything that would amaze you or astound you about Warren Ott. But anyway, that's sometimes we want to hear those things. Inquiring minds want to know. Inquiring minds want to know. We can look again. Who are we listening to? Where are we getting our advice? Where are we getting our knowledge? The things we hang our hats on as far as knowledge goes. Let's go to 2 Chronicles 10 and verse 3. 2 Chronicles 10 and verse 3. And this is following the death of Solomon and his son Rehoboam getting ready to take the throne. And we'll begin in verse 3 of 2 Chronicles 10. And they sent and called him, so Jeroboam and all Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, they wanted to talk to the new king. Your father made our yoke grievous. You know, Solomon accomplished some great things, but apparently at the cost of his people. Therefore, ease you somewhat this grievous servitude of thy father and his heavy yoke that he's put upon us, and we will serve you. You know, give us a break. And he said unto them, come again to me after 3 days. This is a negotiating technique, I understand, but I can't tell you right now. Just give me the time to talk it over and to think about it. And the people departed. And King Rehoboam took counsel with the old men that stood before Solomon his father while he yet lived, saying, what counsel should I give these people? You know, what am I going to tell them? And they spoke unto him, saying, if you will be kind to this people. What a bunch of wimps, right? And please them, and speak good words to them, they will be your servants forever. Probably, well, obviously, as you read the results of this, good advice at that time. You know, be considerate of these people. Be kind to them. My wife just went to Austin, Texas for a few days. We have a cat, we have a dog. And I'm the only one in the house. I have to take care of the cat and the dog. I have to feed them. In the case of the dog, I need to let the dog out appropriately. In the case of the cat, I need to clean out her litter box, which is not my favorite thing to do. And my wife left me notes, one on the dog, one on the cat. And each note had the word kind in it. Be kind to this cat. Be kind. She says, I know you love the dog, but remember to be kind to him and to feed him every day. Okay? So I've been doing that. But anyway, that's what these people said. Be kind to the people, these old men. And he forsook the counsel the old men gave him, took counsel with the young men that he'd been brought up with that stood before him. So he went to his good old buddies, his good buddies. I don't know if they used terms like that in ancient Israel. And he said unto them, what advice shall I give in return answer to the people which have spoken to me, saying, you know, ease somewhat this yoke that my father put on you. You know, should I be kind to them? And the young men, again, his good buddies that were brought up with him, probably aristocracy, spoke unto him saying, thus shall you answer these people that spoke to you, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, but make it thou it somewhat lighter for us. That's what they said. Thus shall you say to them, my father's little finger, or my little finger will be thicker than my father's loins. You thought my dad was tough. Wait till you get a load of what I'm going to do. You know, his loins, you know, compared to Jeroboam's little finger. And whereas my father put a heavy yoke upon you, I will put more on the yoke. My father chastised you with whips. I will chastise you with scorpions. Not a nice thing to say. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam on the third day, and the king bade them, saying, come again unto the third day. And the king answered and said roughly, a real man's man here, King Rehoboam forsook the counsel of the old men and answered them the advice of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, and therefore my father chastised you with whips. I will chastise you with scorpions. Tough talk. And again, he listened to his good buddies, young guys. Again, probably aristocrats, probably not people who had maybe even worked in their lives. And let's skip ahead to verse 19, the result of all that. And Israel rebelled against the house of David unto this day. And so now you have basically Jews and Israelites. And that's the case today. Of course, most people don't know who the Israelites are today. They think all Jews are Israelites. Well, all Israelites are, they think all Israelites are Jews. They're not. All Jews are Israelites. Did I get that straight? Anyway, the point is, if you're stubborn, you're going to listen to that old man. You're going to listen to people who tell you what you find fascinating with your itching ears. You know, fascinating things. Another thing that reinforces our stubbornness, and there's a song about this. I won't sing it to you, but you've probably heard it. It's called My Way. You've heard it. Frank Sinatra sang it. Elvis Presley sang it. I did it my way. The record shows I took the blows. I did it my way, no matter what. We want to do it our way. Every once in a while, I watch Well, my wife watches it, and I got an idea for a sermon I gave a few months ago by something somebody said on this show in about 20 seconds. That makes sense, and I wrote it down and developed into a pretty nice sermon, I thought. But she watches Oprah Winfrey's Sunday morning show. I forgot what it is, Sunday Soul something or another. And one of the recent guests on there was just going about, if you want to be successful, do it your way. Figure out what you want and then go for it, basically. Don't let anybody else tell you what to do. Now, there's something to that, to a point. But sometimes we think of our way as being above and beyond anything else. So if you turn to Judges 17, we'll see an era in which that was popular thinking in ancient Israel. Now, if you read the book of Judges, it's a chronicle of all the mistakes that were made in Israel, how the people would fall away, and then they'd come back, and then they'd have, some champion would bring them back, and then they'd slip away again. And it's sort of summed up in verse 6 of Judges 17. In those days, there was no king in Israel, but every man did what was right in his own eyes. Everybody did it his or her own way. They did it, as in the first person, did it my way. And then chapter 21, verse 25, the very end of the book. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. And we see that around us today. People doing their thing. Whatever they think is right, without any guidance from God. Again, sometimes we have to choose who we listen to. And we need to listen to God, and we need to study His Word, and we need to pray for His guidance. We need to have a two-way conversation with God. A lot of people believe that it's sort of a one-way conversation. You get down on your knees, you ask God for things, He loves you, He's merciful, He'll give it to you. Isn't quite that simple. It's a two-way conversation. You pray to God, and then you study His Word and ask God to lead you through His Word to determine what you should do and how you should act. But not to necessarily or not to primarily do things your way. Again, I think we've all heard that song, I Did It My Way. Proverbs 12 and verse 15. Proverbs 12 and verse 15. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hears the unto counsel is wise. How does it label somebody who does what's right in their own eyes, does what they feel is right? It's a fool that does that. And again, I can think of a lot of course, having played and listened to country music for half a century, I can think of a lot of country songs that have that in the lyrics. I think of Alabama had a song called Feels So Right. I think there's a line in that or another song, how can it be wrong when it feels so right? Barbara Mandrell, who I have a lot of respect for as a person, but she had a song out, If Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right. And then Dave Dudley, if you're a truck driving fan, had one called, If It Feels Good, Do It. That's the way people think. That's the way our society teaches us to think. That's the way we think if we're not careful. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. He that hearkens to counsel is wise. We need to take advice primarily from God's Word. Proverbs 14 and verse 12. Proverbs 14, 12. There is a way that seems right to a man. And I was thinking of this scripture when I was listening to the expert on Oprah. But the end thereof is the ways of death. When we do it our way, we're killing ourselves. And we can see that. I just remember I'm still plagued with this, but how I used to love certain foods and overdo it tremendously. Even after I found out what was clean and unclean, hey, that means I can eat all the hamburgers I can stand and all the French fries I can stuff in my face and whatever else. I think of this, I think it's is it Wendy's or Hardee's commercial where it shows a big, I think it's a boxer, an athlete, and he's eating a burger, taking a huge bite out of it, and then stuffing his mouth with French fries. Oh, that looks good. But I have to fight that. There's a way that seems right to me, but I have to admit that it's wrong. And the ways of death, it will lead to death. Proverbs 16 and verse 25, a way that seems right to a man, the ends thereof are the ways of death. The things we do, the things we stubbornly cling to sometimes, even after we come into the church, are killing us, will kill us. So we need to be, we need not to be stubborn. We need to deny the old man, to keep that old man buried. You know, when you're baptized, the old man goes under the water. Hopefully stays there. He doesn't kind of sneaks around after us and tries to get us to go back to the way we were. But the old man, we need to be careful of who we listen to. Certain people will reinforce that stubbornness. We need not to do things my way or our own way, but take counsel with God and His Word. Basically, in four words, stubbornness is self-centered. Stubbornness is self-centered. So when we're stubborn, it's a selfish act. You know, I knew I was right all along. Or I don't care. If it feels good, do it. You know, these other things. So the other S word I want to talk about today is steadfast. Are we steadfast? Is that the right way to be? Steadfast in what? Good question. What are we steadfast in? Let's turn to Hebrews 11 and verse 13. And again, this is the other end of the spectrum. They both, stubbornness and steadfastness, are firm, forms of firmness. So this is, you know, steadfastness is firmness as well. And again, Hebrews 11, verse 13, I know we refer to this quite often, talking about some of the heroes in the Bible, some of the patriarchs and matriarchs, people like Noah, Abram, Sarah, and it says in verse 13, these all died in faith, or according to faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. They didn't get to payday yet. They weren't paid off in this life. I'm sure they were in many ways, and we are in many ways. You know, we enjoy certain privileges, as was mentioned, I think, in the opening prayers today. We have certain privileges. We have certain things that we benefit from doing things God's way, not our own way. And we're persuaded of them, embraced them. Do we embrace what we've seen, what we see afar off, what we'll be celebrating during the holy days, particularly the fall holy days? We focus on God's kingdom, and it's afar off. Are we persuaded that this is going to happen? You know, do we embrace those concepts? Do we embrace that vision and confess that they were strangers and pilgrims on this earth? You know, we're not a part of this society. We live in this world. We're hopefully not a part of this world. Maybe you came upon what I came upon this week several times. People, how are you going to vote?
Who did you vote for?
I didn't want to get into a big thing, so I said, it's my own business. But some people are very, very adamant about, you know, going after people who don't vote. I just ran down a list of a few candidates, and I said, well, you know, I'm not a big Hillary fan. I'm not a big Bernie fan, although as a human being, I think he's a decent man. I would hate to see Donald Trump's finger on the nuclear trigger. He said, well, then you're for Ted Cruz, aren't you? I said, well, no, I don't know that much about him. But nevertheless, people will talk to you about that and will ask you. And you have to realize that, you know, what you have, and be willing, I guess, at some point to say that what you see, we are strangers. We are pilgrims on earth. We're just visiting here. We're ambassadors. We represent another and a better way of life and a better nation, God's kingdom. So Are we steadfast in the vision that we share? A vision that we share with each other, a vision that we share with God and Jesus Christ. Are we steadfast in standards? In standards, in the way we conduct our lives. Psalm 119 and verse 44. Psalm 119, longest chapter in the Bible, basically deals with God's law. In verse 44, so I keep your law continually, forever and ever. Do we keep God's law continually? Is that something we plan to do forever? I hope so. I hope that applies to everybody here. Once in a while, we'll slip, we'll make a mistake, but will we get back on in the mainstream and decide that we're going to keep God's law? I will keep your law continually, forever and ever. And you can read through this chapter and just see how strong David was toward God's law, how much he loved it and respected it. So, again, are we steadfast in our standards? Are we willing to compromise once in a while? Hopefully not. You know, hopefully we're steadfast in those standards. As Dennis Luker mentioned to me when he first told me about the Sabbath, this was over 50 years ago, and said, if you're serious about the Sabbath, you'll keep it to the point of death. Wow. I never thought of it like that. I always thought it was a good idea. But how dedicated are we to those standards? Those standards which we share with God and Jesus Christ. Are we steadfast in our personal conduct? Our personal conduct. While we're in Psalms 1:1. Psalms 1:1. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. You know, do you, by standing in the way of sinners, mean standing in that road, you know, being with sinners, or sits in the seat of the scornful? Are we scornful? You know, a lot of that going around, isn't there? Look at the election. Look at the conduct of some of the candidates. Scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord. Are you delighted with God's law? And in his law does he meditate day and night. Is that something you think about? Every time you look around and you look at, you know, I'd rather you listen to the news. But if you listen to the news or look at the news or read the news, however it comes to you, do you meditate on God's law and think, you know, if so-and-so had observed God's law, this wouldn't have happened, whatever it is, whether it's somebody, you know, killing somebody else or whatever, or robbing somebody because they need money for drugs or whatever. And I always think, well, I wonder what's behind that. So we need to meditate on God's law day and night every time we consider anything. I was dressing this morning. I'm not saying anything about God's law having to do with this, but I stood as I'm standing now in front of the mirror. I think I was combing my hair or something. I noticed my red tie. I thought, uh-oh, people are going to think I'm an advocate of Donald Trump, that I'm a Trumpy or whatever you'd call him. I mean, this is a fairly common tie, and 2-3 years ago, a lot of guys wore them. Now the only place I seem to see it is on Donald Trump. This has nothing to do with that. I just figured the suit is kind of dark. The shirt has a print to it. I'm not as bold as Andy Duran, who looks really good wearing a print shirt or a checkered shirt with a print tie. Look at that. I mean, that looks good. I'm not that bold. And that's what people are wearing today. So I wore this tie. So don't make more of it than there is. I'm not trying to be like Donald Trump. And he shall be like a tree. Again, talking about a man that stays out of scornful ways, that meditates on God's law. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth fruit in his season. His leaf shall not wither, and whatsoever he does shall prosper. We need to let God's law determine our conduct, not what we feel, not what we want to do necessarily. If it's within God's law and it makes sense, you know, sometimes we need to do original things. But sometimes we need to be careful of what we believe and in what we allow ourselves to do. Let's skip ahead to verse 6 here. Psalms 1:6, "For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish." In other words, doing the wrong thing is going to kill you. Matthew 7 and verse 13. Matthew 7, beginning in verse 13. Again, talking about our personal conduct. "Enter you in the straight gate, at the straight gate. Wide is the gate, broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many shall go in thereat." So we walk a narrow line. We're like on a tightrope walk, you know, in our lives, hopefully. It's a narrow way. We deny ourselves a lot of things that we might want to have that might look good. Again, it feels good, do it. If doing this is wrong, I don't want to be right. But do we walk that narrow line? And I've told you all how much I used to love lobster. I haven't had lobster in over 50 years. Good for me. But that's something that I would, you know, I'm walking a narrow line here and a lot of other things. "Straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leads to life, and few there be that find it." I remember when I was in the Army, when I was in Korea, it seems that guys, there's always one or two guys in there that want to pontificate all the time and, you know, say certain things or make certain statements that are outrageous or conspiracy theories. And one of the guys in my unit over there, he used to say, "But the majority is always right." I don't see that here. You know, many there be that find it, that find that easy way, and few there be that find the right way. So he was wrong. The majority is not always right. The majority, I think the term is the majority rules in certain societies, but that doesn't mean they're right. You know, look at some of the people we put in office. And you look at the pictures of 1930s Germany and all those people that just loved Adolf Hitler. Well, if all those people loved him, that must be right. Well, it wasn't. Cost a lot of people their lives, millions of people their lives. So we are steadfast, hopefully, in our personal conduct. Are we steadfast in our mission? Are we steadfast in our mission? Matthew 24. Matthew 24, verse 13. "But he that shall endure to the end," steadfast, "shall be saved." We've got to make it all the way to the end. And again, I can just look around and count people here and see how many people are here. And I can remember the good old days when we used to meet west of here in a little building and we had 200-300 people in this little community. And most of them, many of them, I don't know, some of them are probably still doing things, I hope, that are pleasing to God. Others that I run into from time to time don't remember a lot of very basic things. It's just gone away. "But he that endures to the end, the same shall be saved." We've got a mission. We've got to complete that mission. We've got to stay on it until the end. Verse 45 of Matthew 24, "Who then is a faithful, wise servant whom the Lord has made ruler over his household to give him meat in due season," or give them meat in due season? "Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing." Find so doing. Are you so doing the work that God has given you to do? You know, you're in church. That's, yeah, part of it. Fellowship. You hopefully, you know, are supporting the work financially. And hopefully you're even more so supporting the work with your prayers. Down on your knees every day, and I hope you do. I go through the home office in my mind, among other things, and think of the people who work there and ask God to give them his spirit, that they can do the work in a way that will please him. and that we'll be effective in reaching the world with this message that we have. So are we steadfast in our mission? How about follow through? Follow through. Revelation. Revelation 3 and verse 10. And this is talking about the Philadelphia church. Now again, I don't claim to know for sure what these churches are, whether they are eras of the church, probably, whether they are certain attitudes that are ingrained in every era of the church, or whether they're attitudes that are part of each and every one of us as church members. But nevertheless, this is a good thing. And God says here to the church of Philadelphia, because you have kept the word of my patience, I will keep you from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. Behold, I come quickly. Hold fast that you have. Let no man take your crown. You know, men can take our crown. People can take our crown if we let them, if we get angry enough. You know, sometimes people in the church, we see people in the church who make mistakes, people in the church who do the wrong thing, people in the church who maybe get away with it, and we let that discourage us. As I said in my discussion over lunch today, I'm not here because of any person. I'm here because of my relationship with God. And no matter what another person may do, I'm going to stay close to God. I'm going to look to God for my counsel, not some other person. And again, we've seen people let other people take their crown. To him that overcomes, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out, and I will write upon him the name of my God, the name of the city of my God, which is the New Jerusalem that comes down from heaven and from my God, and I will write upon him a new name. So that's what we look for. Are we following through? You know, are we following through? Are we doing what God tells us to do right up until the end? I had a lesson in follow through one time. I was working on a radio project with the Council of Churches, and I was working with a very well thought of clergyman in the community, and we were trying to find some medical help for a lady whose daughter was deathly ill and had to go to Kansas City for it. And we worked together, and we were able to raise the funds to send her to Kansas City to see this doctor. In fact, I think we went on the air, and we got actually a person who was going there was going to drive her there. And I thought, wow, mission accomplished. And this guy, this clergyman, to his credit, said, okay, wait a minute, we're going to get you there. Do you have a hotel to stay in? Do you have money for meals? And he made sure that she was taken care of. That was follow through. You know, mine was, okay, we have this thing, we're going to get her up there. And we got her up there, we got her back. But she was going to have to stay there, I think, overnight. And he was concerned with her well-being beyond just getting her there. So good for him. And we need to have, if we're steadfast, we need to have follow through. Steadfastness, another four-word phrase, you know, stubbornness is self-centered. Steadfastness is centered on God. That's where we get our ideas. That's where we get our vision. That's where we get our standards. That's how we judge our personal conduct and what we're going to do. God describes and puts us on a mission. We need to follow through on that. So my question is, are we going to be stubborn? Are we going to let that old man have his way, or that old woman? Are we listening to what attracts us and which we find agreeable? Or are we studying God's word? Are we going to remain steadfast in our vision? Steadfast in God's standards, in our personal conduct, in our mission, in our follow-through? Let us, brethren, remain steadfast. Give up that stubbornness that holds us back and leads us in the wrong direction.